Elevated Raymond is it as a data message, 12th hour cost 37 congregation, and it's out of the fellow town in Elgin, Texas. Today is May 28, 2025. It is the third day of Sibian 2029. We will start our first day service today with the continuation of two Tony Greens, row number 22, and the title is The Great Paradox of the Ages. You'll find that whole track in track 2 information about the Great Paradox. January 10th, 1948, by Ricky Harder. Zechariah 6:1-8. And I turned and lifted up mine eyes, and looked, and behold, there came four chariots out from between two mountains. And the mountains of brass, and the first chariot with the red horses, and then the second chariot black horses, and then the third chariot white horses, and then the fourth chariot grizzle and bay horses. And I answered and said unto the angel that talked with me, What are these, my master? And the angel answered and said unto me, These are the four spirits of the heavens which go forth from standing before the Yahweh of all the earth. For the black horses which are therein go forth into the north country, and the white go forth after them, and the grizzle go forth toward the south country, and the bay went forth and sought to go that they might walk to and fro through the earth. And he said, Get your hands, walk to and fro through the earth. So they walked to and fro through the earth. Then cried he upon me and spake unto me, saying, Behold, these that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country. I will continue reading here. For the paradox in this prophetic symbolism is that the fourth chariot, for you see, it is his, the two teams, the grizzle team and the bay team. One team trying to go to and fro to the earth, what is to become of the chariot, and which of the teams is likely to take it. That is the paradox, for they cannot both have it unless they walk together. As this is a paradoxical symbolism, it has been a mystery ever since the prophet wrote it, and as it is now disclosed for the first time, inspiration obviously is forewarning someone of something very serious that is taking place at this particular time. What can it be? For the prophet Zechariah was as anxious to know as we are. For he asked, What are these, my master? And to his question came the answer. These are the four spirits of the heaven which go forth from standing before the Yahweh of the whole earth. But the angel answer is positive. For the chariots, he declared, are the saints of the heaven. So he said that who stand before the Yahweh, and who stand before the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, and who are sent to go to and flow through the earth. Only then, these four chains and chariots symbolize four messages, four spirits sent from the Yahweh's presence and sent all of the messages from Yahweh are carried to and fro through the earth by the ministry and the church. The chariots and their chains, therefore, are seen to symbolize the church at work in the four different periods. Well, the next question is, where is the stream, where in the stream of the time shall we look for the message laden and the troubled burden church in our time and in the past on what the vast mountains give the clue for the church turned from between of them. We should therefore first find out what the mountains symbolize, if the mountains symbolize, and where they stand in the time, and as the church came from between the mountains, one standing to their left in the future, and the other to their right in the past. It is necessary to locate them first. For the biblical interpretation of a symbolical mountain is as follows. For the Jerusalem shall be called a city of the truth, and a mountain of the Yahshua of the host as the holy mountain that rises through. For the mountains and the Zechariah's prophecy, therefore, as elsewhere in the Bible, are seen as the symbol of two government churches, very similar in the nature both of the brass, and at the two different times, one to the church right and one to their left. Then of the brass, a metal that has everlasting quality, that does not deteriorate, shows that they represent something eternal. Moreover, the mountains being of the same symbolical material as that which the feet of the Asher, Revelation 1:15, were shown to be brass, it locates the mountains in the Christian era, or Christian era, where the only such holy governments of Yahweh in the Christian era, one is in the past and one in the future, between which the path of the church, the four church lives, are the church of the Pentecost with the 120 spirit filled disciples, symbolized by the mountain to the church, right? And the church at the second Pentecost, Joel 2:28-29, the teacher with the 144,000 spirit-filled disciples standing on the Mount Zion with the Lamb, Revelation 14:1, symbolized by the mountain to the church left. Is there understood that the church of today is made up of all kinds of the material, not of the solid bread, not of the true Christian zone, but so mingled with the good and bad, weak and tired, for the truth is there for others. There is to be another such sin destroying and sinner shifting theocracy as the one in the day of the Ananias and Sapphira, who for the sin gave up the Spirit as he fell at the apostles' feet, Acts 5:1-11. Plainly, the chariots symbolize the church militant at work between the two Pentecosts. For the fourth chariot being the last, it is to be found operating just before the second Pentecost. Since the chariots are led by the horses themselves must symbolize the chariots, church's leadership, and the passengers in the chariots must symbolize the laity. For the symbolism, though, is to describe the paradoxical situation that exists with the fourth chariot, the last, and hence the lead of sin, Seventh-day Adventist chariot, with the judgment message for the dead, 1844, as her name itself indicates, for the first chariot, you remember, is led by the red horse, the second by the black horse, the third by the white horse, and the fourth by the two kinds, grizzled and dead horse. For the color of each horse being a mark of the species, it must be indicative of the natural and consequential circumstances. And as before noted, they are symbolical of the ministry in each segment of the church history. The red evidently signifies martyrdom. The black signifies captivity. The white signifies freedom, grizzle, and indifferent color. Neither black nor white symbolizes ministers that are neither true Christian nor true Gentile, hypocrites in other words, members of the true church at the time that misinterpreting the truth and putting their own interpretation, or that's what you call hypocrites. Well, the bay, however, denotes strength, as the marginal reference points out, a purebred, one breed of purebred horse. For this symbolical prophecy is seen to corroborate history. It points out that the apostolic church at the cross had first suffered martyrdom, shown by the color red, and then followed the dark ages of the religion, and when the church was in captivity, black. Following these came the Protestant period, the period of religious freedom, and at last comes the fourth church with its bay and grizzle tune. The tunes are seen to have a controversial. A struggle over the shirt, grizzle being an indefinite color, neither black nor white, denotes hypocrisy, the kind of which is hitherto for unknown. Whereas the color bay denotes spiritual strength, the kind hitherto for unknown. Since the church originated in Asia, Jerusalem in the particular, the first church, it seemed to have remained there, for it went nowhere. The North Country, geographically north of the Palestine, is where the other church went. That is, the country which the Christian nations are now inhabiting. For the fourth church, though, is supposed to go to and fro through the earth unto every nation, the kindred and tongue and people. But contrary unto this, the grizzle horses go forth toward the south country, which figuratively speaking would be spiritually the spiritual Egypt, wilderness, in other words. Yahweh's spirit having been solid in the north country, must you note that the messages of Yahweh in the north country were generally rejected, especially the one of the fourth cherub, which caused the spirit of the truth to turn away and to bring truth no more to them, to be silent there, and that therefore there is not to be expected any truth through them. That's the Seventh-day Adventist Church. For the double team of the horses and their two kinds of the colors pulling in the two different directions, or it is seen to symbolize a double set of the church's leaders, the Seventh-day Adventist leaders, and the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist leaders. Okay, this, now this is wrong. B.T. Holland writing this, he's saying that he's right. He's saying these double team of horses. One represents the Seventh Day as a grizzle horse team, and the bay representing Ellen G. White and the true Adventist, represented by the bay horse. The Davidian, the Vichy Hollow calls it he's calling those grizzly horses as representing the Seventh-day Adventist leadership. But they represent the General Conference Seventh-day Adventist leadership, not the Ellen G. White leadership. The Davidians represents the Ellen G. White leadership. And that's the one that took over in 1930 and called themselves the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. The true Seventh-day Adventist. And the other ones that will end up in charge of the team of horses, of the bay horses, the pure breed. And that's what we inherited. Unlike in character and aim, symbolically speaking, the grizzly horses, those that appeared first on the prophetic scene, are leading the chariot into Egypt, the wilderness, from which they are to come out rather than go back into. For the bay horses, show or endeavoring to pull away from it and go to and fro to the earth. You know, it's taking up his yoke as commanded to finish the gospel work. So, what's the gospel work? Sister White started the gospel work in 1844 with the three angels' messages of Revelation 14. And she said that they represented the sanctuary system being restored and put back into operation of the Old Testament, of Leviticus 23, 1 through 44. All the statutes and judgments of the sanctuary system, Ellen G. White, that's what she was purporting in 1844 on, until she died. So, the gospel work, as Ellen G. White did, was the teaching of the three angels' message and the sanctuary system restored back to its rightful order, with the feast days and everything, and with the ordained system of true worship being practiced, in accordance with the Yahweh's plan. But this cannot take place so long as both teams are hitched to the chariot, for the chariot cannot possibly move in either direction while one team pulls in one direction and the other in another direction. You seem to be occupying yourself with something else. I'll get through this life, cousin. I'm gonna get through this life. I'm gonna get through this phase. I'll go ahead. I'll let you go on being like you are. I'll get through it. I'm just gonna do what I know to do. Yahweh will reward me. That may have been on tape, that part right there. That's your best. 22 minutes. So you had to check that 22 minutes out and see where I was doing all that talking to her. How did that then? I wasn't recording anything. Well, I'll be damned. Well, not much. Part two, that's the story. That's the last paragraph of page 22 of the Great Paradox. Two Time Agreements, number 22. For the double team of the horses, represented by Zechariah 6, the double team of horses of the grizzled and the bay, the grizzled representing the general conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, leadership that hijacked the Seventh-day Adventist leadership of Ellen G. White in 1890, and there are two kinds of colors pulling in the two different directions are immediately seen to symbolize a double set of church leaders, the Seventh-day Adventist leaders and the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists. Unlike in character and aim, symbolically speaking, the grizzled horses led by the general conference of the Seventh Day, and these general conference now men are Jesuit Catholics that have invaded and taken over the Adventist Church. So these grizzled horses are not even Adventists; they're Catholics. Those that appear first on the prophetic scene are leading the church into Egypt, where the worldliness from which they ought to come out rather than go back into the bay horses go are endeavoring to pull away from it and go to and fro to the earth as commanded to finish the gospel work in accordance with the Yahweh's plan. That this cannot take place so long as both teams are hitched to the chariot, for the chariot cannot possibly move and either direction, while one came forward in one direction and the other in another direction. For the immediate necessity, therefore, is to on his discharge the one, so that the other can be free to go to and fro to the earth as soon as they are told to go. When this happens, the paradox will be a paradox no longer. What put the two different kinds of leaders working at cross purposes shall let the spirit of the prophecy give the answer. Here follows the description of one set of the church leaders. Those who have rendered supreme homage to science have falsely so called will not be the leaders then. Those who have trusted to intellect, genius, or talent will not then stand at the head of rank and power. They did not keep pace with the light. Those who have proved themselves unfaithful will not then be entrusted with the flock. Testimony, Volume 5, page 80. Obviously, those self-important leaders who love to slumber in a lukewarm country are represented by the grizzled horse. We shall now read of the leaders whom the bay horses depict. The ones that come on the scene last, where the Yahweh has a faithful servant who in the shaking testing time will be disclosed to view. There are precious ones now hidden who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light which has been shining in a concentrated blaze upon you. But it may be under a rough and uninviting exterior that the pure brightness of a genuine Christian character will be revealed. In the daytime, we look toward heaven, but do not see the stars. They are there, fixed in the firmament, but the eye cannot distinguish them. In the night, we behold their genuine luster. Volume 5, 80-81. This is exactly what is happening right now. Those who are rejecting the message that is announcing the judgment for the living, those who did not keep pace with the light and are satisfied to stay in the antiquated Egypt, the Seventh-day Adventist ministry are to be discharged unhitched. Well, that's what happened. Brother Johnson represented the last leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist ministry at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, in 2002-2003, when he brought Gilead Center to an end. And the hidden ones, those represented by the bay horses, that's who I represented at the time when Yahweh used me to bring Brother Johnson to your close. I represented the bay horses that was hidden in his ranks as a member of his church. For the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist ministry are coming to the front. They are now being disclosed to view and are getting ready to take the chariot. Then as soon as they are told to go, they will unhesitatingly and speedily move on to and fro through the earth with the message of the hour, the judgment for the living. But here we see that Vijayawada prophesied that that would take place during the 1930s, that the divisions would end up being the ones that would be in control of these bay horses. But the bay horses are in charge of the fifth movement for seventh of the seventh day Adventist. And the grizzly horses was in charge of the chariot during the fourth movement of the seventh day Adventist. And Vijayawada is only in the fourth movement. So he was in the movement when the grizzly horses were running the show. So the division, Shepherd Rod never did take charge of the chariot. It was the fifth movement of the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44 and 45, that took charge of the chariot. With Yahshua at the head of this leadership of the bay horses. Now let the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination concretely explain what and where the South Country is. I am filled with sadness when I think of our condition as a people, for the church has turned back from following Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at their want of the spiritual power. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimonies of the spirit of the prophecy of the Yahweh is with the leavening of our churches everywhere. For the Satan would have it thus: ministers who preach self instead of Yahshua would have it thus, for the testimonies are unread and unappreciated. Yahweh has spoken to you. Light has been shining from his world and from the testimony, and both have been slighted and disregarded. For the result is apparent, and the lack of the purity and devotion and earnest faith among us. Testimony, Volume 5, page 217. Underscored words belongs to us. What will unhitch the grizzled horses from the chariot? Isaiah the prophet has the answer. Isaiah 66:16-20. For by the fire and by his sword will the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahshua shall be many. That's Ezekiel 9, start with. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nation, unto Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, unto Tubal and Avan, unto the isles afar off that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahshua, or unto Yahweh the Father, out of all nations. upon the horses, and in the chariots, and in the litters, and upon the mules, and upon the swift beasts, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, says to Yahshua, as the children of the Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel into the house of the Yahweh. Here is projected a slaughter, found in Ezekiel 9, taking place among those who have been instructed to abstain from the unclean meats, but among whom many are violating Yahweh's command for the disobedient, those whose bellies are their gods, including those who sanctify and purify themselves, the self-righteous and the gardens behind one tree, behind the truth-hating minister, Isaiah 66:17, or by the Yahweh himself removed from among his truth-seeking ones. After the transgressors are thus removed, then those who will live, the remnant, the escaped one, become the servants of Yahweh and are sent to all the nations, especially unto those who have not as yet heard either of the Yahweh's fame or the good news of his kingdom. For these escaped ones are to bring into the house of the Yahweh all their brethren, all that will be converted unto Yahshua, as a great multitude, which no man could number, of all the nations, and kindreds, and people, and tongues, for they shall stand before the throne, and before the Lamb clothed with the white robe, and palms in their hands, Revelation 7:9. Thus will the gospel, or the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20, be finished by those who escaped from the Yahshua's slaying. Ezekiel 66, Isaiah 66:15-16, and the Yahweh's people be quickly gathered from the four corners of the earth, happily brought as an offering unto the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 66:19-20. Now is everyone's chance to decide to be either on the one side or on the other, either to reform and be led by the faithful, their horses, or to cling to the self-important grizzled horses and stay by them in the South Country. Here it occurs. Here is indeed a momentous decision to be made by every member of the denomination. It calls for the action that will decide the future destiny of the liturgy as well as of the ministry. Now is your opportunity to act, and it is my wish and prayer that every member of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination chooses to be on the one side, or on the side which this unveiled paradox of the ages plainly and definitely instructs you to be on. Do not let the grizzled horses of the general conference of the Seventh-day Adventists deceive you any longer. Make their prayer speeches with thus saith the Yahweh, to take them to task on the strictly biblical truth. end of number 22. We had now number 23 entitled Keeping the Commandments, the Stony Heart, and the Carnal Mind. That would be three times reading number 23. Part 3 of our study, it says text of address, January 17th, 1948, by Vicki Holler, with this title, Keeping the Commandments, the Stony Heart, and the Carnal Mind. Scripture is found in Revelation 22:14-15. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs, and sorcerers, and whoremongers, and murderers, and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. Here we see that only those who do his commandment have the right to enter into the city when the work of the salvation is finished and the message gathered home, for they will be those who will still keep the commandments of the Yahweh even after sin is eradicated. For the sin nevertheless cannot be eradicated while the law is transgressed. For the transgression of the law, it is sin. 1 John 3:3-4. For the commandment of the Yahweh, you see, are eternal. Okay, for the commandments of the Yahweh, you see, are eternal. And only when the Christians begin to live the life which the word of the Yahweh advocates, will they find themselves living above the law, then only will they be free from the transgression. Finally, if the commandments of Yahweh are eternal, then they must have always existed. For the Sabbath that was made and hallowed, and the week of the creation before sin came, is contained in the commandments. And two, Adam could not have sinned if the commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, had not sin been in existence. Romans 7:7. What shall we say then? Is the law of sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin by the law. I had not known lust except the law has said thou shalt not kill. For the Saint Paul's inspired statement places the Ten Commandments, you see, in the very framework of the gospel. Without the commandment, he declares, the followers of the gospel would not know what sin is. And when we're talking about followers of the gospel, we're talking about followers of the sanctuary system, with the keeping of the commandments and statutes and judgments of the sanctuary system by a creation calendar, knowing when to observe all the different holy days at the appointed time of the year. Romans 7:8-10. But sin, taking occasion by the commandment, wrought in me all manner of concupiscence, for without the law, sin was dead. for I was alive without the law once, but when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. And the commandment which was ordained unto life, I found to be unto death. Here we see that the law does not save, but it condemns, and that without the law, there would be no sin. For the law did not save Adam and Eve, but it judged them unworthy of the tree of life and of a home in Eden. In fact, it sentenced them to death. For the law is only a teacher of righteousness, that is all. It is not a savior. Romans 7:12-14. Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and just and good. For then, that which is good made death unto me, Yahweh forbid. But sin that it might appear sin, working death in me by that which is good, as sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful, for we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. Well, the people who obey state law think it an extra statute, statutes of the liberty, but those who delight in sinning, to them the law is anathema. Any murderer who by the law has been sentenced to death naturally does not delight in the law that sentenced him, nor in the people that executed his sentence. If such a one had his own way, he would abolish the law. All criminals would do away with the law of Yahweh too, for the law is spiritual. And they come, sold under sin. What would happen if there were no law in the kingdom of Yahweh? No law against murder and theft, or against envy and jealousy. Who would want to be in the kingdom even for a time, if such were the case? Then we would be better off in the kingdoms of the world. For the Decalogue, moreover, is not only a moral code, but also a physical one. For sin against the law involves the sinner be sinners too. It visits the iniquities of the fathers upon the children and to the third and fourth generation. Exodus 20:5. Then too, every descendant of Adam is naturally born in sin, is given to sin. Romans 7:15. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would do, that do I not. For what I hate to do, that do I. Such being the man's lot, the carnal man hates the law of Yahweh, and more so because it crosses his will. Romans 7:16. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. If one abstains from that, from this, he consents that the law is good and effective, although by nature he might like the idea of stealing. Romans 7:17. Now then, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. For the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not that I do. Now, if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. I find in the law that when I would do good, evil is present with me. For I delight in the law of Yahweh after the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the laws of my mind, and bringing me into the captivity unto the law of sin which is in my members. Here you see we are given. Here you see we are born with the law of sin within us. And so it is absolutely necessary for the law of Yahweh to restrain us from sinning. Romans 7:24-25. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? I thank Yahweh through Yahshua, our Savior. So, then with the mind, I myself serve the law of Yahweh, but with the flesh, the law of sin. Yes, Yahweh and His law in our minds, which we acquire only by the study of the word of Yahweh, are our only hope for the victory over the law of sin and the flesh. Romans 8:1. There is therefore now no condemnation unto them which are in the Yahshua, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. For the moment we accept the, for in the moment that we accept the Yahshua as our Savior, all of our trespasses against the law are blotted out and paid for by the death of Yahshua. Were this not the case, we ourselves would have to pay the penalty of the death, from which there is no resurrection unto eternal life. Romans 8:2. For the law of the Spirit of life in Yahshua has made me free from the law of sin and death. Here the apostle introduces another law, the law of the Spirit of life. Three laws in all. Number one, the law of the Ten Commandments. Number two, the law of the flesh. Number three, the law of the Spirit of life. But this, the third law, let us remember, is in the Yahshua, and it makes us free from the law of sin and death. Only we be in Him. Romans 8:3-11. For what the law could not do, and that it is weak through the flesh, Yahweh sent His own Son in the likeness of the sinful flesh, and for sin condemned sin in the flesh, that the righteousness of the law might be fulfilled in us, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. For they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Spirit the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against Yahweh, for it is not subject unto the law of Yahweh, neither indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please the Yahweh. But ye are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if so be that the Spirit of Yahweh dwell in you. Now, if any man have not the Spirit of Yahshua, he is not of His. And if the Yahshua be in you, the body is dead because of sin, but the Spirit is life because of the righteousness. But if the Spirit of Him that raised up the Yahshua from the dead dwell in you, he that raised up the sheriff from the dead shall also quicken your mortal body by his spirit that dwelleth in you. It is our privilege to have the same spirit that was in Yahshua. In fact, we must have the spirit if we are to walk in the newness of the life, and if we are to have a part in the resurrection of the just. From the Paul's discourse, you see that to be a Christian means to watch every step you make and to war against your own self, lest you willfully fall into the pit from which there is no escape. For the Christian, moreover, cannot sin. His righteousness in the Yahshua is absolutely secure, for the Yahshua has paid the penalty for his past sin. Moreover, if he should accidentally sin again, he has an advocate to plead his case, even Yahshua, the righteous. Thus it is that though a righteous man will fall seven times a day to rise up, still continues the race and finally wins. To suppose that you should have to struggle to keep the commandments of Yahweh and the kingdom of Yahweh throughout eternity, should have to struggle as you struggle now. Suppose the law of the flesh to stay with you forever. What? Then would you then be as anxious as you are now for a place in the kingdom of in the kingdom? Yahweh tells us what to expect. Jeremiah 31:31-34. Behold, the days come, says to Yahweh, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, although I was a husband unto them, said to Yahweh. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Yahweh, Israel, after those days, said to Yahweh. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and with and will be their Yahweh, and they shall be my people, and they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, know the Yahshua. We're actually talking about the Yahshua here. I'll read that last part over again. I will put my law, okay, it says, I was an husband, although I was a husband unto them, said to Yahshua, that this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of the Israel after those days, said to Yahshua. I will put my law into their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their Yahshua, and they shall be my people, and they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, know the Yahshua, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith Yahshua, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Here is the promise of a new contract, a new covenant. It is not the kind that the Yahweh made with our predecessors in the day they camped out of Egypt, for the day he wrote the commandments on the tables of the stone and left to treat them. Instead, he makes a new covenant. A covenant to write them on their very hearts. Then every one of us will consequently know him without having to be taught. Take notice, though, he is not to make a new law, but a new covenant, a new contract for the keeping of the law. For the difference is that rather than he is writing the law on the tables of stone, he will write it on the fleshy tables of the heart. The seat which the law of sin now occupies. For this covenant, you see, is to be made with both the house of the Israel, the ten tribes, house of Joseph, and the house of the Judah, the house of David, with all of the Yahweh's people. For the scripture, remember, does not say that we cannot keep the law while it is written on the tables of the stone. But it definitely says that we can, for those who broke the law are reproved for so doing. We can therefore, even now, inconveniently keep the commandments, though they be still written on stone. For the convenience sake, most Christians wish the law were abolished, and some make themselves believe that it has been abolished, although the only law that has been abolished is the ceremonial sacrificial law of the animal, not of the sanctuary, the shadow of the Lamb of Yahweh. What the difference would there be whether the law be written on the stone or in our hearts? The experience of the Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, revealed the answer. Had the king, by the force, been made to live with the cattle in a stable or in a field, he would have committed suicide if possible. But as soon as the Yahweh took his human heart away from him and put the heart of an ox in him, the king was perfectly contented to be with the cattle and altogether discontented to live in his palace. Were the same thing done unto every one of us, our desires would be the same as the king's. In the like manner, when the stony heart is taken away from us and the heart of flesh with the law of Yahweh written on it put in us, we shall then find it altogether too inconvenient to sin and most delightful to keep the commandments of the Yahweh. And so you need not fear having to struggle to keep the law of Yahweh in the kingdom as you do here. You will then be perfectly contented to live a sinless life. In fact, you will want to sin no more than you would now want to sin. Wonderful indeed, but when may we expect this miracle to take place? To find the answer to this question, we need to connect Jeremiah's prophecy with the Ezekiel prophecy of the same event. In Jeremiah 31:8, behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the coast of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame, the woman with the child, and her that travaileth with the child together, a great company shall return thither. Ezekiel 36:24-28. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness and from all your idols. Will I cleanse you, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes. You shall keep my judgments and do them, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh, Savior, Deliverer. This brings in right step. This our contest at the 11th hour call. Remember, click on our audio or that we're going to close now to the song. Okay. It says, for the records from both prophets clearly point out the time in which this miracle will be performed on the hearts of the Yahweh's people. Both prophets make it as clear as can be made that this change of the heart takes place in the Holy Land, Palestine, at the beginning of the kingdom which the Yahweh promises to set up, and that days of these kings, Daniel 2:44, not after their days. He moreover says that he will take us from among the heathen and gather us from all the countries and take us into our own land, Ezekiel 36:24. The land in which our fathers dwelt, Ezekiel 36:28. Then at that time, says inspiration, not before, will he sprinkle clean water upon us, clean us from all filthiness and from all idols, also a new heart that he then put in us, Ezekiel 36:26. He will give us his spirit and cause us to comply with his statutes and to keep his judgment, Ezekiel 36:27. Read these scriptures for yourself and see if they say all that I'm trying to tell you they say. Jeremiah 31:35-40. Thus saith the Yahshua, or thus saith the Yahweh, which giveth the sun for a light by the day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by the night, of which divideth the sea when the waves are of roar, for the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, of the host, is his name. So we're actually Yahshua talking here. If those ordinances depart from before me, saith the Yahshua, then the seed of the Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith the Yahshua, if the heaven above can be measured, and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, I will also cast off all the seed of the Israel for all that they have done, saith the Yahshua. Behold, the days come, saith Yahshua, that the city shall be built in the Yahweh from the tower of the Hananiah unto the gate of the corner, and the measuring line shall yet go forth over against it upon the hill of Gilead, and shall compass about to go at, and the whole valley of the dead bodies and of the ashes, and all the fields unto the brook of the Kidron, unto the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holy unto the Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever. People can believe anything they wish to believe. that we will believe the Bible. I know that this is what the Bible teaches, and that this is Yahweh's schedule for these events, and since this is Yahweh's program for their cleansing of His people and for their receiving of the new heart, our message becomes exceedingly important to all who wish to be in the kingdom. We can put our heart and soul in the work, though, and leave the results to the Yahweh if we ever had to be all out for Yahweh and none for self. It is now end of number 23, Sound of Green, Volume 2.